So good to have you with us on Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. Every day we bring you the very latest on COVID-19 from a noted medical authority. Always good to know what the latest is in research into a vaccine, treatments for COVID-19, and the public health response to the novel coronavirus. We're joined today by Dr. Shruti Gohil, UC Irvine School of Medicine professor and associate medical director for epidemiology and infection prevention at the UCI School of Medicine. Dr. Gohil, good to have you with us again.
Great to be here. Thanks, Larry.
Let's talk first about the concerning news that we got from California's Secretary of Health and Human Services, Dr. Mark Galli, yesterday, who said that there's a significant problem with the state's data system that's used to come up with the numbers of COVID-19 cases that we've got. What's your understanding of what effect that has on the public health response to the virus?
Yeah, I think it is definitely concerning if we're not hearing about all of the cases amongst those who have been tested to be positive. But there are a few things to keep in mind. First of all, it looks like the glitch here has to do with laboratories reporting to public health authorities, particularly in non-hospitalized patients. So the way in which that data is captured is different from the way hospitals like ours may report over to public health. Much more standardized and mandatory reporting has been a part of our workflow for decades. And so that part of the data, the hospitalized patients, ICU patients, all that is quite intact from my understanding. It's those other tests that have a delay in being filtered up to through a different system to the state.
And is the rate of hospitalization to you still the most important number to keep an eye on?
It really is. For me, it represents so much. It is the tip of the iceberg. Number of cases, if you assume that in any given community, and that's an assumption, but it's a good epidemiologic assumption of normality of distribution of general sickness and comorbid conditions within a community, then you assume that a certain percentage of your population will be at risk for hospitalization, and that percentage is of people who are at risk are relatively constant within any given community. So if you look at how many are hospitalized, that's the tip of the iceberg of how much spread there may be. So the rate of change in hospitalized patients is, in my mind, a really helpful indicator of how big that iceberg might be and how that iceberg is changing over time.
And as you look at the numbers on hospitalization, where do you see us standing in Southern California?
We are, you know, it's cautiously, it appears that the overall change in hospitalization rates is going down by a few percentage points in several counties. However, in San Bernardino, we see a little bit of an uptick. So I'm going to take that as more or less of a constant. I don't know if that's a significant change or not. It's only time, the tincture of time, that tells us, looking back, where we are. But it looks like, I'll say for Orange County, for example, that we have seen a steady but slow decline in the number of hospitalized patients.
We're seeing significant delays with some people getting test results, and, you know, still difficult for many people to get tested. Is it realistic that we're ever going to get to a point where testing is abundant and available to everybody, or, you know, with repeat testing of individuals? That's just so many millions of tests. It's not realistic to get there.
I do think that, you know, it depends on what you, who's the base of how many people you want to be testing and when are we going to test people. If we just increase our demand and say that we want to test everybody every week who's in the office, well, we'll never get there in terms of testing availability. But if we say that we're going to really target the people that are symptomatic or people who are in settings where they're going to see lots of public and really sensibly, rationally use the testing to find your case patients, then I think we could get to a sweet spot where we can have enough materials to go ahead and test. It's all about logistics. it seems that all along the chain, it's about the logistics and organization and having a cohesive testing strategy.
At UCI, do you have access to the number of tests that you need, and are your patients getting timely results?
Yeah, we do believe so. You know, we have had, like every facility, struggles with staffing and reagents on and off throughout the pandemic. But we're in a place where we're able to have patients present and go ahead and send testing. Sometimes there are delays, of course, on the weekends most often. But we can get results back fairly soon. We've actually scaled up our laboratory capacity to a significant amount, double, triple what it used to be within the last couple of months.
We're talking with UC Irvine Medical Center Professor Dr. Shruti Gohil. She's a specialist in epidemiology and infection prevention, talking with us the latest on COVID-19, one of our stable of star medical experts that we have coming to us every day on Air Talk, sharing their expertise. If you have questions for Dr. Gohil, we're at 866-893-KPCC or the Air Talk page, kpcc.org. Back in 1 minute. UC Irvine School of Medicine Professor Dr. Shruti Gohil with us right now on Air Talk, taking your questions about COVID-19. She's the Associate Medical Director for Epidemiology and Infection Prevention at the UCI School of Medicine, 866-893-KPCC. Dave, who is always a good asker of questions from Venice, wonders, Dr. Gohil, about how most people in Southern California are getting their exposure to COVID-19. Do we know, you know, what the main sources of transmission are?
You know, I think that it's clear that when we sort of began reopening again, we increase in the number of transmission pathways just by sheer number of people interacting. There have been reports in several counties about parties, larger gatherings, people who aren't necessarily honoring the social distancing strategy. What's tricky about this virus is that it can be so mild in its presentation and mild in its symptoms, sometimes confused with other illnesses like allergies or other, something subtle as a fatigue, and you could be infectious to somebody. And that's a little bit different than what we're used to in identifying ourselves as being sick and being able to stay away from each other. And so this, I think, is a major reason. People don't recognize their symptoms on time, and they're going about their own business and unwittingly spreading disease. The other major reason here is those of us who can afford to stay in, go ahead and stay socially distant from the rest of society, are able to protect ourselves and others in a way that essential workers often cannot. We do have people who come out into the community and who may be entering workplaces where we have substandard or suboptimal ways of preventing spread between coworkers, and that may be a major contributor.
Seems that one of the big challenges has been with food processing facilities, meatpacking plants, and other places where people are moving around, they get in close proximity of others, and it's been very challenging for them to have avoided larger scale breakouts, outbreaks in those environments. Parties you mentioned as well, and you know, with bars and nightclubs being closed, residents of some of the hillside communities of Los Angeles claim they've just had more and more of these party houses. Next hour, we're going to talk about this, in fact, and that people come without any face covering. There's heavy drinking. They're, you know, close proximity to each other. And these are, you know, it's particularly fertile ground for the spread of COVID-19. I don't know whether there's been detailed record keeping about whether those parties have been big spreaders or not, but Dr. Gohil, can you speak to the risks?
Absolutely. And you're right. I'm not sure about the detailed record keeping, but it certainly is true that when you talk to people like me across the nation, the stories get repeated over and over of some families or larger gatherings and parties that occur and an outbreak that results in multiple hospitalizations within that group. So while there may not be data, it's happening. The risks are that, you know, they're at the most vulnerable point. You are providing an access point between your nose and your mouth, talking to people in close proximity, people who may or may not know that they're sick, and then eating and drinking when you're doing that. Obviously, you can't do that with a mask on. And so this is basically providing a transmission pathway for the virus. And each time that happens, you may not make a lot of people like to have cause and effect, black and white. I went to this party and then I never got sick, or I went to this party and I did get sick, right? But what we forget is that each interaction then has double, triple, and thousandfold impacts on every single thing that you may do. So, for example, one person gets sick at a party, they go ahead and infect a couple others who don't recognize their symptoms, and those people go to the grocery store, and the person at the grocery store has no idea that this other person had that exposure, and then the transmission changes, goes on and on. So the vulnerability is open mouth, open nose, and talking in close proximity. Maybe you're even sharing drinks. Maybe you're sharing utensils unwittingly and not doing hand hygiene.
We're talking with Dr. Shruti Gohil, UC Irvine School of Medicine, where she's a professor. Joe in Culver City says, in workplace break rooms, people are taking off their masks when they're eating because break rooms are typically closed indoor spaces. Should people be keeping their masks on? It would be hard to do, Joe, of course, when people are actually in the act of eating. Also, can you contract the virus through your eyes? Joe, thank you for those two questions. Lunchrooms, you want to speak to that, Professor Gohil?
Such a difficult question for, I think, every work setting, including our hospitals. What we advise is that if at all possible, if you're unable to do social distancing and you see somebody's already eating in there, has their mask off, they should, of course, be continuing their eating. We ask our healthcare workers, for example, to just leave and go find another place outdoors in a socially distanced patio to go ahead and eat. Whenever possible, eating outdoors would probably be a safer option, and workplaces should do what they can to allow for that safe practice. The second question about the eyes really has not been proven, in my view, in SARS-CoV-2, but it is absolutely possible that that is a mucous membrane by which entry can occur. We saw this in case reports in a related virus called MERS-CoV. And to my understanding, it is not clear. No one has actually proven that direct inoculation of the eye for COVID-19 is a risk factor per se, but in an abundance of caution, it seems absolutely wise to have the eye protection on. The other reason for face shields, actually, is to protect that mask underneath it from getting contaminated from sprays or sneezes or other things from other folks.
And, you know, on the issue of lunch, I've noticed a lot more people eating in their cars than I ever used to see. I think that's become a retreat for a lot of people to take their, you know, their salad or sandwich to go and to just, you know, have it in the car by themselves where they know they're safe.
So smart.
Even if the upholstery isn't. we have a third drug that study results show is safe for human release, if not necessarily effective. Novavax, they have done their phase one trial. So this obviously a good thing. But again, you know, concluding phase one, there's still a long way to go, Dr. Gohil.
Yeah, it sure is. Moderna has a vaccine that's now in its phase three trial. So looking at probably more than 30,000 patients or volunteers who are going to enter that study. So really important to look out for those results. It's definitely encouraging to see Novavax had done both for their phase one, looked at how many antibodies are produced by one component of your immune system called B cells. They also did something that is really important. They looked at T cells and they found good activity and response for that vessel.
All right. Dr. Gohill, it is always a pleasure. Thank you so much for being with us, and we appreciate all that you and your colleagues do at UC Irvine Medical Center. Thank you so much for being with us.
Great, thank you.
Dr. Shruti Gohill joining us, one of our terrific team of physician experts. She's professor of medicine at UC Irvine School of Medicine. Much more to come in the next hour.